This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
Here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Matt the Miz Misler on the other side, and the MGO Blog Roundtable crew is with me. Craig Ross, Seth Fisher, and Brian Cook. And Brian, I felt bad that Michigan lost. Then I felt bad for putting you on the spot, man. You said it was gonna be this really, really nerve-wracking experience. Tournament hockey. So I'll start it out this way by asking you, was it more that Michigan didn't play its best game, or was it more that Denver just came and took it from Michigan? Which one is more responsible for Michigan going down in the Frozen Four?
It's an overtime game as well. So it's like also just fate, luck, that kind of thing. But I do think that I would probably say it was more Michigan not planning very well. So they played a very conservative game plan. They were, I think, excessively timid, and Denver actually came out and forechecked them a lot, which nobody did this year. Even Minnesota played a very conservative style against them, and Denver really got in their faces and disrupted a lot of what Michigan was doing. And there was a lot of people complaining about the penalty situation, but honestly, other than a couple of dump and chase interferences that Michigan was committing to, I didn't see Denver take a penalty in the first three periods. Like, they did a really good job of keeping Michigan on the perimeter. And when you're on the perimeter, you're just not going to get a whole lot of calls. So I feel it was disappointing, because I felt Michigan really could have gone toe to toe with this team, and they just decided that they didn't want to sell out their goalie. And then they kind of did that anyway. So I'm a little disappointed by the way the season ended.
I don't know which one of you reacted, but it sounded like, was it you, Craig?
Yeah.
Concur?
Yeah, I agree. It was a curious, it seemed like Michigan made curious decisions in this game. They sort of got away from where they were all year. I mean, Michigan is always an extremely aggressive team. Sometimes that means they've given away the puck or given some odd man rushes, but the upside is that they're an attacking team, and all of a sudden they didn't seem like that. And I think that was a stylistic choice more than what Denver did, to be honest. And not that Denver is not a great team, because they are. But you know, we came out in the first period, we were completely outskated, I felt, and were completely didn't look like the same team that we had been all year. Brian, I think, said they hadn't thought through it well enough. I think maybe they thought through it too much. That the Quinnipiac game, for example, and the ends of their sort of bad third late games in the NCAA had maybe perhaps made them overthink what they were doing, as opposed to just doing what they did all year, which worked by and large well enough, and took advantage of the talent that they had. You know, Michigan, in the second period, Michigan, I thought, had a slight edge, enough of an edge, and the third period was pretty even. And then really in overtime, Michigan outskated Denver for most of the overtime period until the team decided to just let a puck sit there and stay and skate by it. The penalties, I agree with Brian. I didn't see a single penalty on Denver in regulation. I thought the penalties against Michigan were a little bit borderline, but in the end, they didn't cost us. But there were penalties against Denver that were uncalled in overtime. And I'd like to see Michigan get a power play in overtime, because there was one grotesque one that they let go and another one that was at least the equivalent of what they called in regulation. But all in all, yeah, disappointing. Some of it is just the way the puck goes in hockey. And one game, as Brian has pointed out over and over, one game series in hockey is got a large element of randomness. But I wish Michigan would have come out and played the sort of style they played all year, as opposed to this more passive style they played in this game.
Seth?
There's not a whole lot I can add unless you've budgeted us for some swear words, because overtime playoff hockey has just been brutal to Michigan in recent years. And, I mean, it really just comes down to, you know, Michigan gets a 2-on-1 in overtime. They're about to bury it. The puck pops up on its side. Yeah, and because of that, you know, they don't get a good shot off. And, you know, that goes in the goalie's chest. And then another time, like, the puck kind of bounced over a guy's stick, and then another guy skates by it, and that causes the turnover that causes the final score. So I thought Michigan came out a little stiff at the beginning. I agree that they're their strategy made sense if you're like trying to sit and look like how are we going to outthink Denver. I think that the mistake was trying to outthink Denver instead of just saying, look, they play our game, let's just play it better than they do. It might have been an overreaction to Quinnipiac. You're going to have to ask the coaches that. But it felt like Michigan tried to say, okay, this team loves to stretch the puck. They love to, you know, they're going to come pressure you, and they're also going to, you know, make two-line passes as much as they possibly can. So always keep a guy back and don't leave your goalie out to dry. And I agree that they kind of, you know, that took away some of Michigan's best attributes against this team. But you can do this with any hockey game. Like, this was a 50-50 game. Denver deserved to win as much as Michigan did. And, you know, you can't just sit here and be like, oh, we, you know, you use strategies in hockey sometimes. And if it worked, it would have been brilliant. So
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, Denver got outshot us, what, 2-1, close to? Mm-hmm. And it really felt like most of the game that Michigan was just trying to hang on. And the really disappointing thing is, if you just compare it, the defensive zone breakouts of both teams, is that Denver was pretty easily able to exit the zone in a controlled fashion, and Michigan generally was not. And that can't go back to skill level, right? it's not about how skilled Michigan was. It's just they were unprepared for what Denver was going to do to them, and it looked like Denver was better prepared for Michigan than vice versa. And
any chance they were just tight, or you think it was all the way they played was all by design, it was all strategic?
There's a chance that they were just tight. It did feel like, especially the Denver breakouts, is that they knew what was coming. And they were very well prepared to escape the zone. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, can't get too upset about an overtime loss in the Frozen Four, because, I mean, Denver was just as good as Michigan all year. And they don't have the raw talent level that Michigan does, but they're a little bit older. But if you look up and down that roster, those guys are all NHL draft picks. So there wasn't really that big of a gap, and they just had a little bit more time together, I think, and that was decisive.
All right, so let's talk the future. And you've heard Michigan fans already starting to try to draw parallels. 97 expected to win, they don't. 98 expectations aren't as high, and they do win. Can you see that sort of forecast for next year's team if Luke Hughes comes back? I already got the news that Eric Bertillo is coming back, and you guys were saying in the break, sounds like the Devils are on. They're saying go blue right now with regard to Luke Hughes. Is that accurate?
This is something NHL teams finally learned after the Red Wings just killed them with it for years. Is hold back your guys from the NHL as long as you can, because it slows down their clock. So it means that you get another year out of the guy before he enters his restricted free agent year and his unrestricted free agent year, which is when you really have to pay the guy. So that was how the Red Wings did it, and they were able to develop all that talent and actually get them to fit right into the system. And teams used to rush guys up because they wanted to take advantage of like the excitement over drafting guys, especially early draft picks. And they finally started to learn college is a perfect opportunity to develop your players without having to pay your players. And I think New Jersey's certainly doing that. That was why Michigan got this incredible team in the first place. 10 years ago, you'd never see, four of the top five draft picks staying in college hockey either way, let alone one team.
So ESPN's Emily Kaplan tweeted out a week ago that he will not sign for New Jersey and is leaning towards returning for his sophomore year. They talked to, I think the New Jersey general manager explicitly stated that they were planning on having him at Michigan next year. So I think that his return is almost inevitable. And the only thing that would change that is if the Devils suddenly needed someone because they had a season-ending injury on the blue line or something. But I think you're going to see him back. You're going to see Portillo back, and then everybody else is gone. I'm going to be interested to see if Garrett Van Wy or Moyle comes back, because they do have COVID years that they could use, and that would be, I think, a real stabilizing influence. And then you're looking at another recruiting class that is virtually on par with the one 2 years ago that brought in Power, Beniers, and Hugh and Johnson. Sorry. Wow. So you have Adam Fantilli, who's probably a lock to be the number three pick in the 2023 draft. You have they have so many guys. You have
Rutger McGroarty.
Rutger McGroarty, who's probably a first round pick. You have Frank Nazar, who's probably a first round pick. You have Seamus Case, who's probably a second round pick. Hunter Brustewitz, he's been hurt, but he's a guy who was also in the running for a first round pick. You have Gavin Brindley, who's another 2023 guy who's probably going to be the top American taken. So you have a ton of high-end talent coming in, and you're just going to see what happens with it, really. And the thing is that Michigan might be stuck in these two-year cycles where last year, they made the tourney. They were a three seed. They were clicking towards the end of the year, and then COVID, of course, canceled the tournament. I don't think it's going to be, wire to wire, we're in the running for a one seed. I think they're going to be very talented, but they're going to be real young. So it's going to be, I think, an up and down season.
So put it in perspective for me. All of you guys can take a stab at this, because that was an unreal recruiting class, one the likes of which, I mean, if you make the Fab Five comparison, were there other highly rated classes, but you just had the feeling, man, we'll never see this again, right? And here we are talking about right here, immediately on the heels, for the most part, of an epic class, them coming back with another. So is there a precedent for that in this program? Is this unique right now for Michigan hockey? Is it unique in college hockey, the way Michigan is recruiting right now?
I mean, teams like BU and Boston College have done this from time to time. And they obviously have a lot of talent coming in too, but in terms of just concentration at the top end of any particular class, this is pretty unique. I even left out a couple of guys like Jackson Hallam, who was a third round pick last year and was one of the best players in the USHL this year. They have guys coming out their ears. So it's just about youth and maybe getting time to gel together. Like that Denver team had a bunch of guys who were second, third, fourth, fifth rounders, and Michigan has guys who are mostly in the first and second rounds. So the advantage that Denver had is those guys tend to stick around a little bit longer. And Michigan might have some issues where it's just a little bit like Kentucky basketball, where every year you're trying to put together a new thing, and someone like Villanova, who has Colin Gillespie for 16 straight years, right, is just better able to have continuity. I think it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it, but that is an open question. Like, how much of the inexperience is going to hurt Michigan?
I'm glad that you, Brian, that you just used the Kentucky analogy, because I didn't want to say it first, because it does feel like Michigan hockey has become a lot like Kentucky basketball. I don't recall.
Without cheating.
Yeah, without that. But in the sense of a lot of guys who are going to be here for 1 year, 2 years, and losing some sense of continuity within the program, which might mean you never quite get there, but you always have the team that you look at and say, hey, why didn't that team win at all? And because I don't think I've ever seen a team, my guess is no one's ever seen a team with as much talent as this particular Michigan team had. And you can see it already. They had about seven guys who've already skated in the pros and had really good games in the last, as I was saying, pregame, in the last a couple of days, in particular, Nick Blankenberg, who was not considered a high-end player, who was the third star last night in the Columbus game, was interviewed twice and just killed it. Just had a phenomenal game last night for Columbus. And every other player who played, every other Michigan player who played last night, played well, and didn't seem to be overmatched. So this was just this is quite remarkable what the program has done, bringing, this, and it's going to be the same or similar. I mean, Brian mentioned Jackson Hallam, who I think has 46 points in 34 games this year at Green Bay. And he's almost, not quite, but, he's sort of an afterthought in this class. But yet our friend Anthony, who works for Green Bay, says he's phenomenal, incredibly fast, incredibly skilled player. Yet he might be five or six on the listing of players in terms of professional prospects that you're looking at on the teams coming in. As an aside, Samuskevich. Assume Samuskevich is coming back. He's really good. You've got a core of of Portillo and Hughes, but also you've got Samuskevich, Truscott, who fits probably well with Hughes in the blue line, and Estapa, Edwards, and Duke all have some potential to be good players. So there are some guys coming back. I don't know about Moyle and Van Wy and those.
Yeah, some of these young guys. You got to keep in mind, hockey is not basketball. Where like in hockey, you have to play your four stringers all the time, right? And so guys like Pastuchov. Between him and his brother, I've been messing this name up for 8 years now. but like those guys make a big difference, and we obviously saw them making a difference in the Frozen Four. So I mean, they built their team to keep some of these guys around. You're not going to have a Berniers and Brisson every single time, but like that. The guys they brought in, you mentioned Estapa, you mentioned Edwards, like those guys are going to have bigger years next year. Dylan Duke is probably going to be around for a while. Like, he and Edwards are a little too small for the NHL, so like Michigan can probably keep those guys. And I think that program, if you're bringing in stars, you stick around for 1 or 2 years, and you're also bringing in late first rounders, second rounders who are going to stick around for 3 or 4 years, that program eventually is just going to be talent on talent on talent, and all you have to do is get to the playoffs, and from there it's a crapshoot, right? Like, you just saw playoff hockey. Anything can happen. So as long as you're getting there, and this program is very set to be, a stable presence in the playoffs.
So yeah, I forgot to mention, and we didn't mention Ciccolini, who was out all year, and, there's every reason to believe he'll be a good hockey player going forward.
All right, so guys, I admit to not knowing before the Daily wrote it last week that Mel's contract is up at the end of the month. So how conspicuous is that? Is that as big a deal as it would be if, say, Jim Harbaugh was in like literally the last year of his contract, and then it was allowed to expire? Is it, or basketball? Is this the same sort of oddity for college hockey, or for Michigan hockey, to have Mel Pearson, as much success as they've experienced on the ice, as much as success as they have recruiting wise, to be basically waiting for an extension? And I assume that's tied to waiting for the WilmerHale report. I don't know that to be the case, but I'm curious what you guys think about that. Is this as big a deal as it seems to be?
Yeah. I mean, it's extremely unusual for any sport to have a head coach who's got an expiring contract. Like, when's the last time you heard about that? That's some very strange behavior, at least at the D1 level. So I got to feel like that the investigation is the only reason for that. There's nothing else that would be the problem. It's not performance. It's not recruiting. It's that investigation. And so we'll see what happens with that. I don't know.
I have to believe that Michigan, I mean, I heard Mel say that it was, quote, just one disgruntled employee. But maybe the employee's disgruntled for a reason and for a legitimate reason. I don't know. I have no idea what this is about, and I have no idea what is likely to happen. But it makes sense, since this complaint happened last August, I think, or thereabouts, that that Michigan looked at it and evaluated it and felt there was probable cause, at least, to send it to Wilmer Hale and sort of get it out of their discretion and into the hands of a neutral. It has to be that they're waiting to see what Wilmer Hale comes up with. In that respect, it seems like the university has handled it appropriately, at least given what we know. But we don't know what Wilmer Hale's going to come up with. I've heard a number of people complain about the time it takes. Well, interviewing people, you know, some of whom might want lawyers, I don't know. These things can take some time. It may be that the situation is murky. I guess it might be, and somewhat ambiguous as these situations may be. So it seems like the athletic department has done the right thing, and Ward Manuel has done the right thing by just saying, okay, let's wait and see what Wilmer Hale comes up with. And we don't know. I mean, at this point, we know almost nothing, except that it's enough to keep Ward Manuel from renewing or extending Mel's contract. And as Brian points out, there's no reason to believe that his contract wouldn't be renewed. I mean, the hockey program is recruiting great. People are excited about it. There's no reason to believe, you know, that there's no reason for Mel not to be renewed, except for this.
It's weird that a program actually acts like this. But Michigan actually acts like this, and for good reason. They've just been through a couple ringers, and a lot of their conference mates have been through the ringers. And I spent some time around hockey. I worked for Michigan Hockey Magazine before I wrote for MGO Blog, and I was around the hockey people in the state of Michigan. And I don't imagine that from the time I was hanging around these people, 2004 to 2008, and today, that hockey culture has changed so much to make all of the things that were in the report unbelievable. Like, the idea that, you know, someone would say, like, oh, man, just sign the thing. You know, you don't need to worry about your test. Like, that kind of thing, it's plausible. I don't know I don't know the program itself. The complaints about sexual harassment in the workplace and how they treat women, that's another thing. I cannot, you know, I don't know anything about the program itself. But I certainly remember hockey culture not too long ago did not have a problem with that kind of talk and stuff like that. So it's
let's not wait. Speculate.
I'm not speculating. I'm just saying wait for the report.
Let's wait for the report and not. I mean, the report's going to be the report, and I don't think we should put any words in anyone's mouth. We don't know what we're talking about.
Do we have an idea of how much longer it's going to take for the report to be issued? Have you guys heard anything along those lines?
No.
Right. But I mean, I would just guess that Michigan will be pushing on, at least softly, on Wilmer Hale to get it done, you know, in some reasonable time so they can make whatever decisions they need to make. So I would guess in the next month or two, you'd probably see something, but that's just a guess.
Their job is to get it in one shot. So they're not going to, they can't speed it along, right? They know that they need to get so much information. They know they have to cover from every base, because they can't publish the report and then a month later be like, oh yeah, and we missed this thing over here, after everyone's made their decisions. So, like, yeah. Their responsibility is not to Michigan in their contract situation. Their responsibility is just to get the truth, and that's how it's supposed to be. That's how it has to be. So, I mean, it's annoying for us trying to talk about it and trying to project and trying to think. But this is what happens when you do it right. This is what it looks like when a program approaches this the way that we've all been saying this is how you approach it.
I agree that it needs to be careful and comprehensive. And that's more important than whether it's out next week or 2 months from now.
And if your concerns were more on the trivial side of things, at least by comparison, if you're worried about, hey, it affecting them on the ice or it affecting recruiting. I mean, they made the Frozen Four. They seem to deal with, if it was a distraction, it was a minor one. If that, you just there have another epic recruiting class coming in. The guys who, I mean, you got Eric Portillo coming back. You got Luke Hughes coming back. Guys who you would think that this might factor into their thought process some. They decided to come back. So if you were more concerned about that aspect of things, then those concerns would seem to be at least unfounded in the here and now. It seems to not have had an impact on that. So they aren't paying the price on the trivial side for doing things the right way, to your point there, Seth. So far.
I mean, they could also be selling their assistants. Like, you know, Brendan Arado is a guy that people have been talking about for other openings around college hockey. And, you know, Bill McCall has obviously been there. So, like, you don't have to just put all your eggs in Mel. If the report comes out and says, like, oh, you need to fire this guy, they can keep the program going. It's not like Red Berenson's coaching tree just ended with one guy.
Well, so you have a Title IX investigation and you have some accusations of a hostile work environment for women. And you need to be very clear about what the allegation is. There's a Daily article that says that they were told that women have been denied access to team locker rooms in order to perform work duties under Pearson's tenure. So this is, I don't know if that's a Title IX violation. Apparently under Berenson, that was not the case. And you just had to make sure that there were clothes on all the guys before that happened. But that doesn't seem to me to raise to the level of a firing, if that's the main allegation. Honestly, that doesn't sound entirely unreasonable. we'll see.
To me, it's more like what stones do they overturn? I don't know what they're going to find when they put a microscope to the program, as opposed to like what's been reported so far.
Right. I mean, we'll see. I mean, that's all we can say.
Brian is right. We just don't know. At this point, we just don't know what's going on. So.
All right. That is a good place to end that discussion and to take a break. And with that, we'll be on the other side. Come back on the other side, switch gears, and we will talk about all the reasons why going to work for the Lakers is like a horrible idea. Like, it's just a terrible, terrible idea to even consider it. Fortunately, I don't think that it is seriously being considered. So we will get to that on the other side here. Yeah, man, you got to figure that what they uncovered so far, that they felt comfortable enough to not, you know, to let them keep coaching. Like not to say that they know everything that's going to come out, but man, if they seriously suspected that he was guilty of some serious offenses, I have a hard time believing they would have allowed him to coach.
Me too.
Well, I mean, I think that you can get into some contractual stuff there if you like don't let the investigation take its course. But yeah, I mean, that, so the allegations are like hostile workplace environment based on that policy. Like, I can't imagine that would be something that rises to the level of fire.
What about the one about the fake COVID test thing?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you can prove that, I guess. I don't know. But
you see, my guess is that the university did their own investigation of some sorts. It might have been relatively cursory, but they talked to Mel, they talked to assistant coaches. But when they sent it to Wilmer Hale, my guess is they probably decided this is really muddy. that they're getting different information from different people. And so they said, hey, we can, if we fire Mel, he's going to sue us, and perhaps rightfully so. And we don't want that. On the other hand, we want to make it make sure that the workplace is appropriate, and that's important. So to me, my guess is it's somewhat murky, somewhat muddy. They sent it to Wilmer Hale and they said, hey, you guys tell us, what's going on.
Yeah, but I agree with Brian. Look, if that's what we're talking about, not to say that it's a small thing, access to this, you know, same access for women as there is for men to the locker room. If that's what we're talking about, since you're not firing, if he's found guilty of that.
Yeah, but that one isn't, that if that's all it is, it's hard to believe that's all it is. But I mean, it's got to be, the allegations have to be somewhat broader than that. That's my guess, but we're just all guessing, really.
I think we're all used to the fact that so many schools like to approach this from, screw you, this is just an allegation, this is just, someone's just coming for us, and we're going to go and do what we want to do, or they do whatever their attorneys who are in charge of the contracts do, like they did with Will Wade, where they're like, I mean, the guy, right?
Like, I really don't like the narrative that like Michigan is doing this better than anybody else, because you can throw a rock and you will hit a lawyer who is investigating a professor or the president of the freaking university.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying this is what it looks like. We don't know right now.
Why?
This is what it would look like if they were doing it right.
Stop bringing that up. You bring it up every time. You've said your piece on that. I don't want to hear it again.
Which piece are we talking about?
Just like the, this is what it looks like when you're actually like caring, when it just doesn't really feel like that, right? Like as an institution, Michigan is just buried in lawsuits. Buried.
No contest on that. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. My guess is every single large institution with, you know, 40,000 clients or students and who knows how many employees is always going to have issues. I worked at an organization of 70 employees, and there were always issues. There were always problems of one sort or another. I think all you can say, I mean, and these things sort of have to be dealt with serially and individually. And it looks like, at least on this particular one, not speaking of any other incident, but it looks like on this particular one, it looks like the university, from what we know, is dealing with it appropriately. That's about all you can say. I don't think you can throw and given the fact that there may be other instances with the university, we know of at least one where the university didn't deal with it appropriately. But, then
I think that's what we said. Look, even if you don't believe that the motivation is virtue, that because of their experience, because they're buried in lawsuits, they're like, you know what? We better approach this a certain kind of way.
Right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and I agree.
I just don't think you should be foregrounding that. Like, that's not the thing that matters.
That's fair.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
No dispute.
So at any rate, the Lakers are a shit show. And that is a great thing. That is a great thing, because if the Lakers weren't a shit show, I'd be worried. I'd be concerned. You know, if their only problem was their coach, and they just needed a new coach to fix their problems, I would think that they were a threat. But because you can't fix them, I can't see that on top of all the other mountain of reasons for Juwan Howard to stay at Michigan.
I mean, did they draft Jet? I mean,
right. I can't see them making a compelling case to get him to come there right now.
I've seen too many NBA coaches who hang out with the NBA dudes say themselves, oh, I can fix that, right? Like John Beilein thought he could fix Cleveland. Like that, Cleveland.
Fellas, before we went to the break, I said, hey, the Lakers, they are a crap show. Maybe I didn't say that before we went to the break. I know I said in the break, they are a crap show. That is a good thing.
For not exactly.
that is a good thing for Michigan. I had heard a couple of weeks ago from a coaching friend of mine say, you know, Juwan is going to be the Lakers are going to target Juwan, or he'll be one of the targets for the job. Now, long way between being a target and being a candidate, right? A candidate implies some reciprocity there. There is no sign of that at this point with Juwan Howard. And I don't expect there to be, for all the reasons, Craig, that we have talked about before, you know, being able to coach your kids, you're at your alma mater, all those things. Add to it, though, that the Lakers can't be fixed. Why would you go coach that sinking ship right now when all it will result in is you getting fired in a couple of years?
Yeah, I think, you know, Janine Howard, I think a day or two ago seemed to say that, no, this ain't happening. And so I take that as a clue that it's not happening. In fact, I'll go out on a limb. It's more likely that I would take the Lakers job than Juwan Howard would take the Lakers job, because I would probably take it just for the money, and that I would probably be just about as good as anybody else who takes that job.
Now, Sue says, because this is not going to happen, by the way.
And Sue says it's not. Yeah, well, she's right. I mean, I don't see it happening at all. I see no upside for Juwan at all, not in his career, not, you know, there's nothing here to suggest that this is a good idea. So all these articles are is that every time there's a NBA job open with some glitz or some potential cachet to it, Juwan's name is going to get mentioned.
Well, I think in this particular situation, mm-hmm. it is also LeBron.
It's LeBron.
Because they know each other very well.
Yeah.
And Rob Pelinka.
Yeah. I mean, there's an LA Times reporter who just put out a story that says that, according to people close to Howard, he's not interested. Yeah. So that's coming from the LA perspective. I just, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. You know, once Jace and Jet are through college, then I think you would be more wary of these jobs. But also, yeah, like LeBron is going to be 38 next year, and he shut it down this year because he's old for the NBA. Sorry, Craig.
yeah, but he could be my grandson.
Yeah, he also has this $47 million albatross named Russell Westbrook that you can't offload. And so you're stuck with this ill-conceived roster that no amount of coaching, no amount of getting them to buy in is going to make them a championship. They'll be better. They can be a playoff team if you can get those guys, or Russell Westbrook in particular, to buy into a more of a team concept. But that doesn't make you a champion. And what does that mean when you're the Lakers coach? The five coaches since Phil Jackson, none of them have lasted more than 3 years. All of them. I mean, Mike Brown was there for a year. A couple of other guys were there for two. Vogel was there for three, and he won a championship, and he still got fired. So why would you go take that job? Especially when, hey, you can get it in 3 years anyway, right? You can coach your boys, you know, all your son, your biological sons, and then the rest of the guys on the team that have become your son, and then still have a shot at the Lakers in 3 or 4
LeBron
years.
LeBron will be 41 in 3 years. So I think this is, if anyone is going to do anything, but like the Lakers, the vision, and I don't know if anyone's taught coaches how not to think this way, but the vision is, okay, those guys couldn't do it because they're not me. I can fix this. I'm the one who can. And so many coaches think that's where my concern was. But like, you know, Lakers, their imagination is, you know, we can get the right coach in. He's going to turn the guys around. We'll get other free agents to come and play here for less because they want to play for a championship team. This is how the Lakers think, which is not how most NBA teams think. It's not going to happen, though. Like, not that many people want to do that. LeBron is 38, not 34, and your window is kind of closed. So, I mean, if in 3 years, now you have a over 40 LeBron, and now you're, you know, in the same.
You won't be there in 3 years. It would just be, it's the Lakers. Like, coaching the Lakers is a thing, right? Yeah. They are the most storied franchise in the NBA. So if LeBron isn't there, that's still a very appealing destination for a coach.
So what you've got here is you've got LeBron trying to gear up for one last run, right? Mm-hmm. But whoever is the coach of the Lakers is pretty much irrelevant, right? It's LeBron James. LeBron James is the coach of the Lakers, and someone's going to be paid to be pretending to coach the Lakers.
Well, no, that's absolutely true. That's what I was saying. They might as well hire me or you.
Bring back Phil Jackson.
I don't think so. I think for that squad especially, you got to have the kind of personality that can manage those egos, that can command some respect, that can challenge him when he needs to. Like, that's the thing about Spoelstra. Yeah, you knew Spoelstra was going to be a dude when he got in Dwayne Wade's face. It was like, hey, man, this is my show. Now you have Pat Riley to back you up, but you need someone that can command that kind of respect. That's why I think Juwan would be a guy, one of the guys who could get the most out of him, but the problem is the most isn't the championship.
But that's right. They missed the playoffs this year, right?
And like, right,
like, and the injury situation is only going to get worse as these guys get older, right? So you're expecting LeBron to haul his ass through a whole regular season, get to the playoffs, like, and then you have like three or four, five other serious contenders just in the West, like,
and you still don't have any shooting on your team of note, so. And with little opportunity, little room to go and fix that. So let's bring it back to Michigan. So the portal rumblings, what are you guys liking? What are you disliking? What do you want to hear as far as the portal is concerned here in the last week? Now that we all feel like this Laker Juwan thing is not really a thing.
Well, I mean, mostly what I want to hear about the portal is that Michigan isn't looking for a center.
Well, you know, the guy from Utah Valley, didn't he just commit to Iowa?
Did he commit?
Farquhar, what?
Ardaw.
Yeah,
AMAC.
Yeah, I think he's just committed this week to another Big Ten program.
Well, I'll say this, like I said it earlier in the show. I talked to two, and I was surprised by this. I want to give you a couple of, I think maybe you, Brian, and you too, Craig, you guys were among the first to, and Tim McCormick. So there are a few people that were talking about, hey, you know what? Not far-fetched to think the Hunter could come back. Now I've talked to two team sources who have both said independently that they have gotten the impression that he's leaning towards coming back. Now, they won't go as so far as to say he's coming back. They will only go so far as to say he's given the strong impression that he's going to. Now, again, you get around NBA types, you get in some draft camps, and that can wield some influence, and things can change quick, fast, and in a hurry. But there's at least a feeling, a sentiment within the program that this has gone from being a no chance to, hey, man, that's a real possibility now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think AMAC has committed anywhere, but he did release a top five that did not have Michigan in it. So I feel that's probably a pretty good sign. And then really what you're looking for in the portal then is a shooter. That's it. I mean, you need a guy who can play the two and shoot off ball, because you've got Dickinson, who's going to get doubled and need someone to kick it to, and you have probably Frankie Collins starting at the point, and Frankie is not a shooter. So you just need shooting, and that's pretty easy to come by.
Yeah, I mean, right now, however, Michigan has 13 guys on scholarship. They don't have a scholarship to give at the moment. And so if the team stays intact, if Musa, Hunter, Caleb all come back, then there's no scholarship. Unless you do what was it Creighton with they're a good player, the coach's kid at Creighton, McDermott, was that his
McDermott,
name?
Doug? Yeah.
Yeah, he became a walk-on. That kid became a walk-on his last year. So that his
dad recruited Jet, so you can't do that with Jet, by the rules.
Right.
So they might still have that option with Jace.
I don't know even what the rules are, but I know that with Doug McDermott, he went off scholarship his senior year, even though he was, a very, very fine player. And I think he was drafted in the NBA. And so otherwise you don't have a spot. And that's sort of concerning to me, because you look at the backcourt, you got Frankie, Doug, and Kobe. That's it. Unless you can get T. Will to improve his ball handling a bit and become a two.
That's not happening.
Okay. I tend to agree. That's
he's
my
more
point.
Likely to become a center than a guard.
Right. I think that's my point. So who on this roster looks like a two to you?
I mean, you have Kobe Bufkin, and that's about it.
That's right. That's it. You've got Kobe Bufkin in that, because Doug isn't, and Frankie sure as heck isn't. And so I don't know what the plan is there. If Hunter leaves, I think you probably got to say, okay, Musa and Reed are our centers next year, and we got to find, because they have a desperate need at the two. And as Brian says, a shooter at the two. At least it seems to me, looking at the roster.
Well, fellas, that is our time for today. Another spirited discussion, as I can always count on with the MGO Blog Roundtable crew. So we'll see you fellas next week. To the rest of you, we will see you tomorrow. We will obviously be talking some Michigan women's gymnastics. Did mention that they have the Heisman Trophy winner. The Michigan women's gymnastics team, as they embark upon their title defense now. So we'll be talking about that and much more on tomorrow's show here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor.
Gotta say, okay, Musa and Reed are our centers next year, and we gotta find, because they have a